Hello, this is Dave with the Ford County Record, dated Wednesday, July 11th, 2018. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined Fish Kill Theory, Lake Turnover, Lake Iroquois. This is by Will Brumleaf. IEPA testing water this week to determine cause. If there was a silver lining to last weekend's massive fish kill at Lake Iroquois, it was that the 80-acre lake near Loda had not yet been stocked with new fish this year. Thousands of fish were found dead Sunday morning. Everything from carp to bass to catfish to walleye to crappies to bluegill. I saw some of every species that I'm aware of that were still in Lake Iroquois that were part of the kill. It didn't discriminate based on species at all, said Lake Iroquois resident Mike Johnson, head of the Lake Iroquois Association Bass Club. What caused the fish kill remained unknown Monday. An inspector for the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency collected water samples at the lake Monday to be tested later this week. I believe he's primarily looking at the outfall area of the lake to determine if there was something that entered the lake that could have caused the fish kill, or otherwise looking to see if it was lake turnover that reduced the oxygen levels, said IEPA spokesman Kim Biggs. Lake Iroquois resident Jim Shearle, chairman of the LIA Board's Recreation Committee, said that, as best as we can determine, the fish kill was caused by the fish not getting enough oxygen due to a phenomenon called inversion, also known as lake turnover. Shearle said the lake surface layer likely became very hot during recent extremely hot and humid weather. Then on Friday, a cold snap occurred, causing the surface water to cool down, become more dense, and sink. In turn, causing the water and sediment on the lake's bottom to rise. The oxygen was not available in the water for the fish, Shearle said, because the lake turned over. Shearle noted that following the fish kill, the lake's water appeared very muddy, which lines up with that theory. A group of marine biochemists that the LIA uses to maintain the oxygen and pH levels in the water at the LIA's smaller 5-acre fishing pond, Shearle said, checked the pond on June 29th. Around that same time, the group had received reports of lake inversion elsewhere, Shearle said. So this is something that doesn't happen very often, but it is common, Shearle said. Ironically, when the marine biochemists tested the oxygen levels at the small fishing pond, they predicted that the pond would turn over. Yet the lake, not the pond, did. Shearle said the fishing pond likely avoided a fish kill of its own because mechanical aerators had been installed in the pond this past spring. The lake does not have any aerators, Shearle said. There's motors that create air that emits out into the pond that causes the water to move, Shearle explained. And that aeration was enough to keep that fish population in the fishing pond safe. Shearle noted that the fishing pond is not connected to the lake itself and is also above the lake, meaning that any chemical runoff from nearby farms would be deposited in the pond first. The fish kill was discovered Sunday morning. Later that morning, Shearle organized volunteers to help remove the dead fish. By 10 a.m., we had 30 people at our swim beach volunteering and cleaning up, picking up fish and putting them into an end loader on a tractor, Shearle said. Then we put the fish into a dump trailer and hauled them away to a proper disposal area. The volunteers worked for 4 hours on the swim beach, then after lunch, they moved to another cove and worked another 4 hours. Shearle estimated that about 30 volunteers helped Sunday morning and 20 that afternoon. The cleanup continued Monday with about a dozen volunteers, Cheryl said. It's just amazing how much people have stepped up to help us, Cheryl said. Cheryl estimated the cleanup would likely continue for another week, noting that he expects more dead fish to surface in coming days. Larger dead fish often take longer to float to the surface. It's not done yet, Cheryl said. Cheryl said he thinks there are still plenty of fish in the lake, despite the fish population being depleted substantially. We're going to be working with biologists later on to check and see what the population is and what fish we need to add this fall to restore the fish population, Cheryl said. Cheryl said the LIA Bass Club helps the LIA board decide how many fish and what species of fish to stock the lake with each year. This year, the stocking of the lake was delayed until this fall, which is, I guess, a little bit of a silver lining, Johnson said. Johnson said he would like a more accurate assessment of the fish population that remains before deciding how to proceed with stocking the lake this fall. We were actually looking at stocking options for this fall that would help to limit those populations of some of the trash fish that were killed anyway, Johnson noted. But without having an assessment of the population that remains after this event, it's kind of hard to say what we should do exactly. To help accurately determine the remaining fish population, it has been suggested that the Illinois Department of Natural Resources visit the lake and perform what is called electrofishing, Johnson said. It involves shocking the fish but keeping them alive, so that they float to the surface and a survey of their numbers and sizes and general health can be taken, Johnson said. It would be nice to get that done sometime after this event's kind of over and before we make any final decisions on stocking, Johnson said. Whether the fish kill prompts the LIA board to buy more fish than it normally does remains to be seen as well. Johnson said that due to budget constraints, it has been suggested that a fundraiser be undertaken to raise enough money to expand the fish stocking given this major kill. Also in question is whether the LIA Bass Club's annual Kids Fishing Derby will go on as scheduled at the lake on August 18th, Johnson said. It's in question, pending what we find out about the condition of the lake and the fish population, he said. Johnson said that if the lake is not deemed suitable for the fishing derby, the event may be held at the fishing pond instead. The next article from the Paxton City Council is headlined Burning Ban Eyed in Paxton by Carol Philmoney. Some city officials would like to either allow burning or ban it altogether, said Paxton. At least two Paxton officials would like to see all burning banned in the city, including recreational fires. The City Council's Public Safety Committee met Thursday with just two of its four members present to discuss the proposed ban. The committee members present, Chairman Mike Wilson and Bill Wiley, made no official recommendation to the full council on how to proceed. The council was expected to discuss the proposal further during its July 10th meeting. During Thursday's meeting, Wilson unveiled a proposal that would ban all burning in the city except for recreational fires using seasoned wood and fires for grilling. However, Wiley noted that the issue has been repeatedly discussed over the past 12 years and that he would like to either allow burning or ban it outright. Mayor Bill Engle said he tended to agree with Wiley. The existing burning ordinance restricts residents from burning trash, but the burning of tree limbs and leaves is permitted. Two residents spoke in favor of the proposed ordinance, especially banning the burning of leaves. Dustin Franke is a Paxton Buckley Lota Schools track and cross-country coach and father of three. Franke said his runners need the protection of clean air, just like football players need the protection of a helmet. Sally Ellis is a mother of a runner who trains year-round and also suffers from asthma. Ellis said her daughter carries a rescue inhaler and that it is hard to watch her struggle for breath at the end of a fall race when there is leaf smoke in the air. I'm passionate about our children's breathing, Ellis said. Another resident, meanwhile, asked the committee not to ban leaf burning completely, asking instead for permission to burn leaves 3 weekends in the fall. She said she composts the majority of her leaves, but would like the option to burn some of them. She said she thought the illegal burning of garbage was a bigger problem than the burning of leaves. However, both Wilson and Ingold said they see leaf burning as a big problem. Wilson said that in the several years he has been on the council, he fields more complaints about leaf burning than anything else. Wilson said he figures that maybe only 10% of the city's residents burn leaves. If 90% have found an alternative to burning leaves, then I don't think the city has to necessarily provide another answer, Wilson said. Ingold said he has priced towable leaf vacuums that start at $65,000. Alderman Rob Pacey, however, said it would be hypocritical for the city to vacuum up the leaves just to haul them out to the city's burn pile and then burn them there. City workers routinely burn brush on the far south edge of town. That has been necessary as the city deals with the large number of ash trees that have had to be taken down because of damage caused by the emerald ash borer. Ingold said there are at least 300 more trees on city property that have to be removed. Police Chief Coy Cornett said residents just need to call the department to report violations of the current burn ban. When a resident will sign a complaint, then the police can issue a notice to appear in court and the matter can proceed to court. The next article is titled Doing It for Devon by Mary Schenck, Buckley. Family, friends gather to replace roof on cancer-stricken man's home. Dozens of family members and friends of a dying Buckley man turned their feelings of helplessness into action Saturday. It's been overwhelming, Linda Marquis said more than once as she surveyed the folks who turned out to put a new roof on the home of her son and daughter-in-law. In this Iroquois County village of about 560, almost everyone knows each other. Inside the quaint two-story home, Devon Marquis, 38, was hanging on to life, about to be overcome by the cancer first discovered in him a mere 15 months ago. Mr. Marquis would die a day later. He's aware of what's going on and can sense everybody being here. It's little noisy, but this is the work he did, said Jesse Marquis, his wife of 8 years. I hope it's a little therapeutic. We were hoping it would be soothing for him to hear them on the roof, his mom said. This was something on his list he wanted to get done. I'm sure it's a sense of relief to him. Steve Marquis said he and his son, the older of his two boys, would have been putting the roof on together had circumstances been different. They intended to do it last summer, but life and sickness got in the way. Jessie said that more than a year ago, when her husband was diagnosed with stage 4 colorectal cancer, he had to give up his interest in the construction company he co-owned for 10 years with his lifelong friend, Reggie Wepler. The R of R&D Construction was also there helping out Saturday. I'm just glad he's still with us to see the roof is done. It's been on his mind for a year, said Wepler, also marveling at the turnout. They are all friends and family. It's a blessing to have good people. As if replacing the worn-out roof wasn't enough, friends pitched in to build a sandbox and a play structure for Devon and Jesse's 6-year-old son, Landon. I actually want to play on it right now, said Landon, who patiently posed with his mom, aunt, uncle, and grandparents for a photo to mark the occasion. He has a good understanding for a 6-year-old, Jesse said of their offspring's grasp of what his dad faced. Linda and Steve Marquis said they called their friend Ron Ricci's recently to hire him to replace the roof on the Elm Street house that has held 3 generations of Linda's family. Ricci's, a Buckley farmer who has worked part-time for 30 years putting on roofs, immediately agreed, but he had an additional thought. We'll do it all with volunteer labor. With our community, all you got to do is say, we're going to do this. Everyone is so good-hearted, they just showed up, Ricci said. About 50 men and women turned out with food, roofing materials, tools, and sheer determination on what was arguably the nicest day of the summer to rip off the old roof and replace it in about 6 hours. Some 2 dozen pickup trucks lined the streets around the Marquis Manor. Ricci said so many friends of Devon Marquis and his extended family wanted to do something tangible to help. Sometimes prayers don't work. It's a terrible thing they're going through. The community is pulling together, he said. Not only did they donate their time and food, they gave enough money to pay for the roof, Linda said. Her younger son, Colin Marquis, and his wife, Katie, live in Wilton, Iowa, but came home a few days ago to be with Devon and to help out. Thankful was about all Colin could say of what was happening for his family. Steve also expressed gratitude for the time his family got to spend together the week before Memorial Day in a cabin his family owns on Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Wasn't long after that, Devon's health took a turn for the worse. He and I had a couple days alone, Steve said. That was Devon's happy place, said his mom. We'll continue now with the reading of the death notices on page A6. First, we have Glenn Church in Gibson City. Glenn D. Church, 94, of Gibson City, formerly of Piper City and Roberts, died at 11:53 a.m. Saturday, June 30, 2018, at Heritage Health in Gibson City. A memorial service will be at 11 a.m. Thursday, July 12, at the Living Word Church in Roberts, with the Reverend Doug Lee officiating. Interment will be in the Brenton Cemetery, Piper City. Arrangements are being handled by the Redenius Funeral Home in Gilman. Also, we have Rosemary Fisher of Champaign. Rosemary Fisher, 70, of Champaign, sister of a Gibson City resident, died at 11:30 a.m. Wednesday, July 4th. Visitation was from 9 to 11 a.m. Monday, July 9th, with a memorial service at 11 a.m. at Faith Community Church in Urbana. The Reverend Marsh Jones officiated. Also, Devon Marquis of Buckley. Devon Paul Marquis, 38, of Buckley, died at 6:36 p.m. Sunday, July 8, 2018, at his home. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Friday, July 13th, at St. John's Lutheran Church, 206 East Main Street, Buckley, with the Reverend Timothy Hahn officiating. Burial will follow in Woodland Cemetery, Buckley. Visitation was from 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, July 12th, at St. John's Lutheran Church in Buckley, and also from 10 to 11 a.m. Friday, July 13th, at the church. Byer Family Funeral Services in Buckley is handling arrangements. Also, Florence Snelling, Paxton. Florence Mary Snelling, 92, of Paxton, died at 5 a.m. Wednesday, July 4th, 2018, at Accolade Paxton Senior Living. A mass of Christian burial was at 10 a.m. Monday, July 9th, at St. Mary Catholic Church in Paxton, with Father Dong Van Bai officiating. Burial followed in Glen Cemetery in Paxton. Visitation was from 5 to 7 p.m. Sunday, July 8th, at the funeral home, with a rosary at 7 p.m. Also, we have Lorena Sweeney, Marion, Iowa. Lorena Sweeney, 85, of Marion, Iowa, passed away on Saturday, June 30th, 2018, at St. Luke's Hospital after a sudden illness. A private family gathering was held at her gravesite at 5:30 p.m. Friday, July 6th. In other front page news from the Ford County Board, we have an article titled West Nile Virus Detected in Mosquitoes in County by Carol Filmoni Paxton. Ford County Public Health Department Administrator Lena Sample told the Ford County Board on Monday night that the West Nile virus has been detected in mosquitoes in the county. Sample also said her department has had two dead birds tested, but the virus was not present in either of them. County Board member Dr. Bernadette Ray of Gibson City reminded those present that only mosquito repellent with at least 20% of the ingredient DEET is effective against the virus-carrying mosquitoes. Ray said homemade concoctions just do not do the job. Also, Monday night, no board members responded to five citizens who voiced concerns about proposed revisions to the county's ordinance regulating wind farms. Joanne Fetzner said she has concerns about a proposal to allow turbines as close as 1,500 feet from homes when the industry recommends a 1,640-foot evacuation radius. Fetzner noted that the board has already been made aware of potential health issues associated with wind turbines. Ann Erke of rural Buckley reminded the board that every year, tax revenue from wind turbines will be reduced as they depreciate. Erke said that makes them an unreliable funding source for the county and termed the siting of wind farms as a giant Ponzi scheme. Cindy Erke of rural Roberts reminded the board that county families are due the basic rights of safety and determining the use of their own property. She said the proposed setback of 1,500 feet from homes is a concession to the wind companies. I ask you to bring integrity back to the process, Cindy Erke said. She said she had heard in the community that small property owners were being termed squatters. Terry Wasmer said research has revealed that electromagnetic induction from wind turbines has caused real health problems. Wasmer spoke about a woman in the footprint of a wind farm near Bloomington suffering from thyroid disease that improved only when she moved to a house further away from the turbines and copper cable was buried around the property lines. Ted Hartke urged the board to include waivers with every setback requirement in the ordinance. That way, Hartke said, a wind company could negotiate individually with all property owners. Don't become the middleman, Hartke told the board. J.C. Friedley of Apex Clean Energy, which plans to build a wind farm in the western portion of the county, urged the continuation of the ordinance amending process. That will probably require another meeting of the County Board Zoning Committee to approve changes to the county's wind ordinance. Also, Monday night, the board approved the daily rate of pay for election judges. Election judges who have undergone training will see an increase to $200 from $135. Untrained judges will be paid $175, up from $120. Also, the board approved the low bid from Iroquois Paving of Watsika for $859,035 for repaving 5 miles of Buckingham Road in the northern part of the county. In another article from the Gibson City Council titled Budget Supported by Revenue from Reserve Funds by Jean Nolsch, Gibson City. Gibson City Council members approved a budget for the 2019 fiscal year Monday night with little discussion. Alderman Scott Davis, Finance Committee Chairman, said council members met the previous Monday to review the budget. The budget is for the fiscal year that runs May 1, 2018 to April 30, 2019. It shows increases in 12 of the city's 15 funds, and at $7.31 million, it totals nearly $51,000 more than the 2018 fiscal year's budget. As in past years, the budget is balanced. However, for the second year in a row, reserve funds had to be tapped to provide revenue. Last year's budget was balanced by using $40,000 from reserves, while the 2019 budget required allocating $215,000 in revenue from reserve funds. Davis noted the city always has underspent what it has budgeted. Davis also said the budget includes an across-the-board salary increase of 3% for city employees, but that amount could vary by employee as salaries are set. According to the unanimously approved budget ordinance, the 2019 budget expenses by fund are $2,224,915 for the general fund, $178,200 forestry, $0 motor fuel tax, $121,000 municipal retirement, $33,000 tort, $1,100 GCERT, $21,780 TIF number 3, $108,100 parks, $2,200 band, $2,876,940 for TIF number 2, $106,940 for TIF number 2, recreation, $88,000 for the FICA tax, $2,200 for beautification, $685,000 sewer, and $861,000 water. In the general fund, the three largest expense categories are $511,000 administration, $756,000 streets, and $825,000 police. Council members unanimously approved the lower of two bids received to install a new sewer plant auger. On no fencing on trial basis, Steve Anderson of the Gibson City American Legion Post received approval from the council to provide outdoor food and beverage service for three nights in conjunction with the monthly Friday night cruises in downtown Gibson City, scheduled for July 20th, August 17th, and September 21st. And a closed session was held, meeting first with the police chief and then the city superintendent for the possibility of hiring one or more city employees. And this has been Dave with the Ford County Record, dated Wednesday, July 11th, 2018. I look forward to reading with you again soon.